Fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fish.
Fish, 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 fish talk about. It's one of those days, one of those weeks. Fish and Frank here in the chair, and Robert in the chair across from me, and as always, RJ up there trying to control what's going on. And I think one of the things that, you know, tarpon is one of those fish, and it brings a lot of tourists. And if we get time, we're going to talk a little bit about the tourists and what to do when you come to Florida, what you need, and all that kind of stuff. Because we got people listening from all over the country and other countries like Canada. Isn't that that's a word, right?
No,
that's not a word. No. It's not a name.
I guess if it's phonetically, yeah, probably.
Well, anyway, we've got some amazing people listening from up in Canada, and thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. We're going to try and get to what you need when you come to Florida, but tarpon fishing, the true secrets of how these guys do tarpon. This morning, Robert, you got a call, right?
Yep. Yeah, I get calls pretty regularly from different people. And plus, I call other people to try to get just reports.
All right. So, Captain Carl from KB Backcountry calls you, and what was the conversation like?
He asked me if I had heard of any tarpon around. You know.
Now, Carl was out yesterday. He didn't do exactly too great. He got a few fish up in the air, but that was about it. So they're all struggling a little bit out there.
Everybody's struggling out there a lot.
So what did Carl have to say?
He asked me if I had heard of any fish and where I'd been hearing about any, because he was not finding any fish down near the pass or on the hill, and even the few fish that were down in Captiva, he said those were already boogered up with the handful of people that had already known they were there.
All right, so you get off the phone with Carl. What do you do?
I made a phone call to another captain and said,
"Which one?"
Jay Withers.
Called Jay Withers?
Yeah.
All right, so Carl asked you about the fish. You get off the phone with Carl. You call Jay Withers.
Yep, and then find out what's going on, if he's finding anything, and I get the same answer from him. He's struggling, and they're all looking and driving around in circles trying to find fish.
All right, now, I'm going to say one of the big causes of this is there's a bit of a red tide bloom going on right around Boca Grande Pass right now.
Right.
Just a little bit inside and a little bit outside of the pass. It's not like you're seeing a lot of dead fish, but there is some red tide out there.
Yeah, there's a handful of dead fish, but it's not a major fish kill. It's not a real deep bloom. It's, you know, basically like a surface bloom. It hasn't gotten any depth to it or size.
All right, so after you get off the phone with Jay, what happens then?
I just start thinking in my brain of where the fish might go and what they would normally do.
What were you thinking? The red tide kind of popped into your head.
The red tide popped into my head with it being such a mild bloom, and tarpon are pretty smart, but they do come up to the surface to gulp air. I figured, okay, maybe it's creating a little bit of an invisible shield kind of thing to prevent them from wanting to come inside.
Because it's been what? How long since tarpon been in the past?
A couple of days. They've been showing up there at night for a while, but they're disappearing right away.
So nighttime in the past, things are going on. But so what kind of advice did you give Carl?
I told him to head north. You know, I figure since it's around the Boca Grande area, and knowing the way the tides or the currents and the tides work, that the currents run southward, figure go north above it, and maybe those fish, because they do usually show up there just south of Stump Pass, like off of Don Pedro area, which is an area that they call Shark Alley. There's some deep water real close to shore there. There's some deep patches of grass and some rocky stuff. For some reason, those tarpon like that spot this time of year. And
it's funny because you would think that would be one they would avoid more than anything, because that's literally where the sharks like to hang out.
Yeah, that's how it got its name. Usually if you hooked a tarpon there in the past, you know, it was 8 out of 10 times eaten.
So, it's just weird that the sharks like to hang out there and the tarpon like to hang out there as well. It shows one thing, how they say, you know, most creatures don't have a sense of their own mortality.
Right.
Because if I was a tarpon, and here was a spot where the sharks hung out. I would think that's the last place on the planet I'm going to want to be.
Yep. I agree with you 100%.
It doesn't make any sense, not by human standards. And one of the problems we always have is we always want to give human emotions and human thought to other creatures.
Absolutely. You know? I think that's one of the things that really screws us up sometimes as outdoorsmen in general, whether you're a hunter or a fisherman.
Now, the only time it works for me is I'm going along a shoreline or something and go, oh, if I was a fish, I'd hang out there, and I'd cast that spot to see if a fish is there.
Sure.
That's about as far as I put the human-fish interaction together on that. So anyway, Carl calls you, you call Jay, you call Carl back, and how's Carl doing out there?
He's still struggling, but it almost reinforces what we were just talking about.
So you told Carl to go north. Did he go north?
He hesitated. He said he did, but he kind of hesitated with his answer, so I'm not sure if he made it all the way up there or not.
One of the reasons why, if you go on a tarpon charter, it's usually like $100 an hour to go tarpon fishing. And one of the reasons for that, if the captain is good, he's burning 20 gallons of fuel an hour trying to find fish.
Easily. Absolutely.
I mean, because they'll be up in the harbor. There's been some tarpon up in the 20-foot hole, the middle hole, the other hole. Guys are seeing them free jump, but it's not a lot of visible tarpon, but there's actually tarpon up there.
Right. And then in that time frame, too, though, as Carl did say that there are fish from Boquilla over towards Cape Hayes in that area where they have been showing up the last couple of years. But he said they're acting real lethargic and not really showing themselves much and moving real, real slow. So he got tired of looking at those fish along with the other 50 boats out there that are looking at them and ran offshore because it's nice enough. And he's out just on the other side of the bell buoy. The last bell buoy puts him out about 6 miles offshore. And he said there's fish there, and they're doing the same thing. They're acting real lethargic, moving around real slow. They're not super active. And he's catching a lot of little sharks, little black nose and Atlantic sharp nose that are eating his thread fins and pinfish.
So sharks are taking up his bait. Has he stuck any fish in the air at all today?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's going to be a tough time for a tarpon charter. And one of the things that we're thinking here is there's that little patchy bloom of red tide right around Boca Grande Pass. And it kind of comes in, goes a little bit up to some of the canals up there and around on the beach a bit. And Carl's finding those tarpon up outside 6+ miles out at the end of the channel. And then they're seeing some along the in front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay up there, closer to Cape Hayes. And then we're hearing about a little bit of tarpon up in the holes in the harbor. Well, as you get around towards Cape Hayes, there's so much fresh water there, red tide cannot exist. Red tide, the way it is there at Boca right now, is kind of just a surface bloom. It's not really going deep. So as the tide takes it up into the harbor, all that fresh water coming down the river kills it.
Right.
Red tide cannot live in fresh water. It's the only thing we have right now that actually kills red tide. So as that water comes out of the Peace River, Myakka River, it's killing whatever red tide would happen to be in that area.
Right.
So it makes it a little bit better, but you've still got that hard-to-breathe area. And even though tarpon come up and gulp air, they're gulping it at the surface of the water where the most spores,
heaviest concentration of
pollen from the red tide would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty dangerous. That's why manatees sometimes die from red tide. It's not that red tide, in the water is going to bother them because they breathe air. But when they come up to breathe, it's inches off the surface, and that's where all the spores are. That's the heaviest concentration.
Yeah, you're in the direct contact of it. It's kind of like, would be the best way to describe it. Basically, if somebody were to spray pepper spray in a room, the closer you are to that spot where they sprayed, the more it's going to affect you versus if you're at the farthest point away from that area, you're going to maybe feel a little bit of it or something, but it's not going to make your eyes water, your throat burn, or any of that stuff.
Well, if you're 6 feet off the water, that's a whole lot different than
two inches.
2 inches. So
absolutely.
A lot different concentrations. Anyway, okay, best bet, if somebody's going to go out today and they're going to look for tarpon, it's almost going to be a dead bait thing. I don't really know. Like, Carl's having a lot of problems with sharks because he's trying to use the live thread fins and all that kind of stuff, and those little sharks are just banging that stuff crazy.
Absolutely.
What about what would be your way? Give me two spots or three spots, and how you're going to do it to actually be successful tarpon fishing.
Personally, I'm going to do like the way the guys do down in, you know, the lower Pine Island area, Sanibel area, or what they do down in the Keys. I'm going to anchor up either just above Captiva Pass in the channel, you know, in 6 to 8 feet of water, or I'm going to go to the secondary bridge at going on to Boca Grande, basically the one that looks out going to Gasparilla Pass. And I'm going to anchor and I'm going to dead bait. I'm either going to throw maybe a live pinfish, dead pinfish, catfish tail, or even a whole ladyfish. And I'm just going to post up and wait for those fish to come to me. I'm looking for the 1, 2, or 3 fish. I'm not looking for 20, 50 fish in a school. I'm waiting for them to come to me, because those guys down in St. James City, Sanibel area, even the lower Caloosahatchee, they're averaging 4 to 6 fish in a trip that they're putting in the air. That's what these guys are doing now that are chasing tarpon, but they're looking for the 50 and 100 fish schools. And all they're doing is anchoring up and dead baiting and waiting for those fish to come to them. And the great part about it is, yes, it sucks because it's miserable hot, but you're hooking fish. You're also catching a lot of bycatch, like the little sharks. You're at least staying entertained rather than just driving around thinking that maybe you're going for a boat ride with one of these charter captains. He's just burning fuel trying to find fish or not find fish. They're actually working at it, but you at least are more stimulated by having that rod bent.
I can tell you, as a charter boat captain, I don't know which one was worse. Sometimes I just had to anchor up and try for tarpon. Sometimes I had to jig fish the pass. Sometimes I live baited them. Sometimes you're chasing them through the harbor, the beaches. And I'm not sure which is worse, driving around trying to find some fish that'll eat or anchoring up waiting for those fish to go by.
Yeah.
They're both just great on your nerves. You want to just scream. And you're pacing back and forth on the boat. You're running the boat. You're on the phone with everybody. And cell phones, it used to be Marine Band radios. People would talk on the radio. And the hard part about that is when you talk on the radio, you always feel like you're on a telephone, like nobody's hearing you.
Yeah.
But everybody's hearing you. I mean, if you're on Marine radio in Charlotte Harbor, anybody from Tampa to Key West literally has a chance of listening to your conversation.
Yes.
And so you would have to come up with codes. You know, you say code names for different things so that people didn't understand what you were talking about. It's kind of like, you know, being very nefarious. It was just kind of an amazing thing. But communication, finding friends, understanding how to play well with others is a big part about being a charter boat captain nowadays, especially a tarpon thing. Everybody else hides everything. But when you're out there doing tarpon and you've got 2 or 3 buddies that all fish different areas, one can be up in the harbor, the other can be on the beaches, one can be in the pass. And it's a cell phone call back and forth. They call you. You correlate everything. You know, it's literally the key to successful tarpon fishing right now is having people to talk to.
Oh, absolutely. Networking yourself.
It's either that or you're burning, you know, 40 gallons of fuel a day trying to make this happen. And that's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So anyway, RJ, tarpon, one of your things?
I love tarpon fishing. I do. I don't often get to go out. Back in my outdoor life days, I went tarpon fishing quite a bit.
So you're a drift with bait or drift with lures or troll, or how do you like to fish them?
I like, as Robert was saying, you anchor somewhere when you know you're in the path of the way they move. Eventually, they're going to move through that place, because I was also opposed to burning lots of gas. The other thing I always
enjoy. That's what we have in common. We're both cheap old guys.
That's right. Yes. That's right. The other thing I really enjoyed, though.
No wonder we're friends.
Yeah. The other thing I enjoyed was walking the beaches and looking for pods of tarpon that are running along the beaches. And that's even more exciting.
Well, that's why you're thinner than I am. You'll actually walk along the beach. I set my fat butt in a boat and I kind of idle along the beach.
Yeah.
That's why you're in better shape than I am. So if you were walking along the beach, what lure would you have with you? Because I'm assuming it was lure fishing, or were you bait fishing?
Mostly lures, and my favorite for tarpon is that jointed mirror lure. It's a two-piece mirror lure.
I don't even know if they make that anymore.
I don't think they do either, but I've got a collection of them because they've always worked well for me.
Yeah, and I know the one you're talking about. It's about the size of a regular 52, except it's split.
It's split in the middle, yeah.
About two-thirds of the way back. The main body is a little bit bigger. The tail is a little smaller.
Right, and it's a slow-sinking lure.
Yep.
So you toss it out there and you count and you give it a couple of twitches and you.
I know I still have a couple of those in my box.
Yeah. I always thought that was a great tarpon lure. I also fly fish for tarpon for a while, and that is if you're into self punishment, go fly fish for a tarpon. If you really like pain and you like backaches and arm aches and burns on your hand and everything else, get a good long saltwater fly rod. Get out there with a big bucktail and make sure you got plenty of Advil and other stuff in your fish
bag.
Well,
that was back in the day, because nowadays most of the fly reels have drags that are easily comparable to the spinning reels.
Yes, and that's true. But back in the day, you wore a leather glove, right?
You palmed the reel. When the fish started taking line, you would literally put your palm against the bottom of the reel to slow it down. And when your hand got too hot, you would go to your thigh. We'll start trying to rub it on your pants leg until you burned a spot in your pants. And literally, it would get so hot, you'd have a burn mark underneath your pants. And that was when it was actual fly fishing, no drags. Put a lot of backing on, hope for the best.
The other thing was you had to hold your hands really high up in the air. The higher you got that rod, the more pressure you could put on the fish.
Well, that's friction. Yeah. And it's friction on the guides. If you take a standard spinning reel, just like, say, one you do at snook, redfish, trout, and you run a weight off of the reel itself, and let's say you have it set for 3 pounds. When you put that line through the guides and hold that rod out straight, and the friction of the guides coming down adds 2 more pounds of drag to it. And I would try and tell people, if you want to loosen the drag on your reel, point your rod tip at the fish. Eliminates the friction of the guides, drops your drag pressure by 2 pounds. When you want to slow them down, bring that rod up to 11:30 high and get it, 90 degrees from the fish, and that adds that 2 pounds to it. And you can literally do that. But I fish my spinning reels a lot of the same way as you fished your old fly rods, where I use my fingers against the spool. Rather than tightening the drag, I'm just putting my fingers against it to slow it down. That way, if he starts pulling too hard again, I just release the pressure in my fingers. Instantaneous drags up and down, and I know where I'm at. But, yeah, I'm with you. I love those old fly rods. Reels with no drags.
Yep.
That was awesome. Now, the only thing I will tell you, 90% of the people I've ever seen hook up with a fly rod while they're on a boat, they put the fly out along, the boat drifts along, and they just kind of twitch the fly every once in a while. It's almost trolling.
Almost trolling, yeah.
It's very few people actually cast to the tarpon in Charlotte Harbor. Now, if you're in the Keys or out on the beach where you can see the fish, casting at them is a good idea. But up in the harbor, especially right now at that brown water, there's no way to cast at them without, having to go for rotator cuff surgery the next day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They call it dredging.
Dredging, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of trolling, because they're kind of just doing either a slow trolling motor or actually drifting with the wind, they call it dredging. I don't know why, but that's their term they use.
Okay. Basically, tarpon fishing can be done right now, but you're probably going to have to change your habits. You're probably not going to be able to do it the way you think you're going to be able to do it. If you get out there and you want to be throwing live thread fids at them, you want to do this, you want to do that, better off think of plan B or plan G or plan Q, and you might want to revert to that. Give plan A a try, but give it an hour or two, and if it doesn't work, go to plan R.
Right.
And get on, and you'll actually probably catch some fish. And unfortunately, anchor up, sit and wait.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. It's getting into be almost, this is what we call tourist season. May and June are the peak tourist months down here for fishermen, outdoors people, because historically it's really good weather. This year, everything went nuts. The weather's let everybody down. We're getting into a really good week here, though. So if you're going to come to Florida, and that was the reason I was bringing up our Canadian buddies and New York and Michigan and Minnesota and all over up there, Ohio. If you're thinking about coming to Florida, bring the rod and reel that you like to fish with the most.
Right.
Whatever your favorite rod and reel is, and something that you can cast, whether it's a bait cast rod, a spinning rod. If you're going to bring your fly rod, bring a spinning or bait cast rod with it. When you bring your fly rods to Southwest Florida at this time of year, you're going to be blind casting, and fly rods spend too much time in the air. You pull back, you back and forth, and then you finally get the lure in the water, twitch, 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 and now all of a sudden you're back out. Spinning rod, bait caster, you cast, you bring your lure back, you cast, you bring your lure back. Find your fish with your other tackle, then bring out your fly rod to play with. But that's the ultimate way for summertime Southwest Florida. If you're coming down with a fly rod, bring a spinner or bait caster to find your fish, and then use your fly rod to stop and have fun. But your favorite rod, whether it's a crappie rod, whether it's a musky rod, whether it's a bass rod, salmon rod, bring it. There's a fish for it here. And the one thing about it is, bring your favorite rod with the line you like to use, the lures you know how to use, the lures you're good with. If you've got a rod and reel and you're a really good smallmouth fisherman, and you're taking lures out catching smallmouth, bring that rod, the reel, the line, and the lures with you. Good lures, good tackle, good techniques work anywhere in the world most of the time. The only thing you're really going to have to do is come down to Fish and Frank's and get some leader. And then try the lures that you have. See what you've got. Some of the best stuff that's ever hit this area had nothing to do with this area until it did.
Right.
So you might have the next best lure than anybody's ever seen. How are you going to know until you try it?
Oh, absolutely.
Might be the best technique.
And you're talking mono leader or fluorocarbon leader. You're not talking steel leader, correct?
I'm going to stay with you to mono or fluorocarbon. Now, I don't really know if you're fishing north of Cape Hayes, mono fluorocarbon going to be the same thing. Don't spend the money on the fluorocarbon. The mono leader's a third of the price. Go with your mono leader.
I agree with you.
Because there's no light going into the water. There's no way for the...
What minimal light isn't going to affect.
Right. It's not going to bend light the same way as water with all that muck in the water. There's too much brown.
Yeah.
Now, you get out around the beaches, out off of Gasparilla Island, Don Pedro, Stump Pass, any of these islands, Captiva, Sanibel. You get on the outside... Switch back to fluorocarbon. You got the waters clear enough, that extra little bit is going to make the difference whether you catch fish or not, or you get a hit.
Or even the quality of the fish. You know, that can, you know, bigger fish are smarter in some ways.
Well, you're always looking for that big dumb cousin.
But, you know, sometimes having
the one that ain't
edge.
Just too bright but been real lucky for a long time.
Right.
Your luck's just run out.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're always hoping for. That big dumb cousin that just ain't too bright but been real lucky for a while.
Exactly.
Hopefully his luck runs out there. If you were coming, if you're advising people to come down, what's your advice, Robert?
Basically, like you said, you know, I'd be bringing probably my bass tackle, if anything else, you know, because some people up north like to use the catfish rods or even their salmon rods.
Yeah.
But those will absolutely work, but I want my bass tackle.
Okay. What are they going to need when they get here?
They're going to need the leader you're talking about, but their main
thing
they're
going to need
fishing
lures. I was trying to coach
Robert
just a minute ago. I was trying to mouth words out to him. It's like Robert whispering to me. He's blind. I'm deaf.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there trying to mouth words to him. Then I'm going, wait a minute. He can't see me.
Nope.
And I have no idea what's going on. So
I was sitting there going, you know, guys, you really didn't need to know that. But I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, what an idiot. Okay. So anyway, Robert, once they get here, what do they got to do?
Local knowledge. I'm going to go to get a couple things. One, obviously, Fish and Frank's website for the knowledge.
And yeah, go on fishandfrank.com, click the fishing report, and then once you bring up the fishing report, pull that page up, open a new page, and go to Radio Fishing, listen to the Area Fishing Report. It's a much more in-depth than the written fishing report. And, you know, you can do that off your cell phone. You just go there. It's an MP3. We record it, put it up. So listen to it, look at it, and each one of the places, all those names up there are literally maps that I've done so that you can tell where we're talking about. So anyway, you're going to go on fishandfranks.com, look at where the fish are. What else do you got to do?
A fishing license. And basically, we've got so many different species of fish here and so many different regulations that is very overwhelming. So
you need a pocket RJ. He's an attorney. So
pretty
you know,
much.
A pocket attorney is really helpful.
Exactly.
Isn't there... There's an app for everything. And now, I have never seen this app. I have no idea what it is. I actually make phone calls with my phone.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and so do I. But I've seen... I do pretty much most of my phone calls on it. I do a little bit of texting on it, but I talk to Siri, and she doesn't understand my mumbling very much. So we have a love-hate relationship. Okay. But if you go to your app store and you go to the Fish Hunt app... And then you can go into the
which
FWC.
Is from FWC. You want the one from FWC.
Correct. Well, I think it's a broad spectrum fish hunt app, and then it gives you the listing of FWC and other states.
Right. But you want to go
download.
To the fish hunt thing and then look for Florida Wildlife Commission, which is FWC.
Yep.
And that has pictures, size limit, bag limits, everything on there, what you can do, what you can't do. Right there on your phone, as long as you can get cell service.
Right. So it's good for the information. It's all pretty much current anyway. And this time of year, you know, the Game and Fish is not the smartest sometimes. You know,
gee, no. I'm just thinking to myself. FWC relies on divine knowledge. It's a very religious group.
Yes.
Because
drink the Kool-Aid.
You're going along, and all of a sudden... They change a rule, and then they don't post it anywhere. But you're supposed to have divine knowledge ahead of this
right.
so that you understand the size limit went from 20 inches to 22.
Right.
You're supposed to get that, you know, a divine message. And it's well, nice we have that religious of a government organization.
Let's go one step further, though. Two times a year, they legally change the regulations, which is in January and July.
Right.
And every June, if you're lucky, and every December, they send you the booklet with the new regulations that are supposed to change on those dates. Well, they only send you so many, and you run out. So it's not like you have the booklet readily available.
You got the license. Rules and regulations now. Sorry, we ain't got none. They haven't sent us enough.
Right. So that's where this app is going to come in extremely handy for people to try to understand.
For anybody younger than me, because if you're my age or older, you got no clue as to what app means. RJ, I was going to ask you, if you were coming down as a tourist, if somebody's coming down, what's your recommendation to them? What do you think they should bring?
Well, you need to bring a good supply of Molson's and Labatt because you can't buy it down here.
Okay.
So if that's your beer, if that's your beer of choice, bring it with you because you're not going to find it down
here. It's like Point. If you like Point beer, I don't believe you're getting it in Florida.
Right.
Wine and Kugel's probably another one, although that one I don't know.
Right. I go along with Robert. Bring your bass fishing equipment because you can catch just about everything with that. You know, size is obviously going to be a limit somewhere along the line. But the majority of fish that you fish for here in Florida, you can get with your bass tackle.
All right. The question I got, I'm considering a musky rod as a sort of cobia / almost tarpon rod.
Okay.
Yeah.
That could be.
Without a doubt.
Okay. Now, for crappie tackle... I love catching Spanish mackerel, spotted sea trout, mangrove snappers on my crappie rods. I even do a lot of snook fishing with my crappie rods. And, I mean, I'm talking 2-4-pound test.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that.
I'm really good and you're not?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
No, that's pretty much the truth. You know, if you're used to catching perch and crappie with that, you're not really going out targeting, say, largemouth bass or pike with that.
They would be awesome. A crappie rod like that, a little 5.5 foot, 7 foot crappie rod, whatever it is, ultralight tackle with pompano, oh my God, would that be a riot.
Sure. But if I'm coming down here and trying to fulfill a dream of catching a snook, I'll be darned if I'm going to learn how to do it doing ultralight.
No, that's probably not going
to
be right.
You know, and if you're not...
If you just want to play around and have a good time and hook a lot of different fish and learn how to practice, absolutely, it's a blast.
Yeah, and unless you know how to work a drag, you know, you come down here and hook into some of these saltwater fish and they run. It's not like a bass. You know, it's going to jump and pull a little bit. You got fish down here that they're going to strip 100 yards off your reel pretty damn quick. Well, and unless you know how to deal with that, you know, an ultralight rod is a good way to get into trouble.
When I was doing charters, I had groups that I knew well, and I would get them out in the water, and we'd wade fish these shorelines. And 5.5 foot crappie rods, 2 to 4 pound monofilament, 20 pound leader material, and we were using bait. We were catching snook, 18 to 30 inches. And believe it or not, while you're in the water and you're fighting these fish, we landed all those snook, most of them. I mean, occasionally it broke off. The problem would always come in if you got a school of jacks went by. I mean, a 13-inch jack crevel, and you had no line left on your reel. Before you, zip, little Chinese fish, as they call them, zing pow. They were gone. Zing pow is gone.
I remember a trip to Flamingo, Florida, and this is when the Fed still had the little village there. And I went fishing, and I only brought an ultralight with me. And it was a 35-40 minute walk to get out to the beach. And the first fish I hooked, I have no idea what it was, who that little bastard was, but he took all of my line. So I'm standing there knowing it's, you know, another half hour walk back. Don't know if I'd have any more line. So it was like the whole day was spent sunning myself because I couldn't fish anymore. So you got to remember that, too, is that there's some fish down there. They're going to strip your spool completely, and you're going to be out walking or out fishing or whatever. Bring a spare spool or bring some spare line with you.
Spare line. They don't give spare spools anymore. So you can't get them.
Okay.
Just bring some extra line with you to crank on. Speaking of those fish, Spanish mackerel. We got anything on Spanish?
A lot of good reports on Spanish right now. They're from basically marker one, which is the top of the harbor, all the way through the 20-foot holes, and all the way out through the pass and just off at the nearshore reefs. You know, getting mixed reports of them all over the place. But there's a lot of glass minnows. There's a lot of small white bait around, but it's real tiny. It's basically not much better than a glass minnow right now that's scattered out in the center of the harbor. And those macs have been chewing on them pretty good. Guys are catching them on spoons. We've been selling a lot of spoons lately. The gotchas have been super popular lately. One guy was out there, he just finally got tired of it and just started trolling a jig head. But they're catching Spanish. Some of these guys are catching Spanish up to 22, 23 inches out in the harbor. Which is pretty darn good quality Spanish mackerel.
And I'm going to say, I would love, I have done it, I would love to do it again. I use a cheap black steel leader, the ones I buy in the packages because I don't feel like making them up. And with the little snap on them, the swivel, I tie my crappie rod line, my 4 pound monofilament onto that steel leader and just start whipping little spoons for Spanish. I still think it's a ball. I have a lot of fun with that. And you're not going to get railed on a Spanish.
No.
But where it comes into the problem is the other fish in the school. You hook one, he gets excited, starts running with it, and they all come up trying to chew on your line, chew on the leaders, chew on everything that moves. I've literally watched them hit the line where it goes across the surface of the water, where the V is, you know, as the line's moving across.
Yeah.
I was watching them come up and just splash, and boom, line gone. That is where braid has a little advantage on it, but I think it's cheating sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, wenching instead of fishing.
Yeah,
isn't that
become
what you
become a wencherman instead of a fisherman.
Yeah. That's a good line.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I mean, when you said that the other day, that was actually a very accurate statement.
Well, I don't remember where it started, but I remember you and I talking about winchermen back when braid was first coming out.
Yeah.
Because guys who were fishing 10, 12-pound monofilament all of a sudden we're wanting 20, 30 pound braid all the time, 30 pound braid.
On the same reel braid that they were putting 10 and 12 pound plus mono on.
Because they weren't breaking off anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, Winterman, you know? So I'm still a big fan of having a little bit of fun in with this.
Sure.
And now I will tell you, if I do this, I'm going to curl the barb down on the hook. I hate barbless hooks. Barbless hooks are junk, useless garbage. Our fish are much too active for that. With a lot of the freshwater fish, I can just put it on as long as I keep steady pressure and land the fish. But the bait's more active. If you put a shrimp on a barbless hook or a white bait on a barbless hook, you just wasted your time. One flip, one twitch, boom, they're gone.
Yeah, they slide right off.
Yeah, they're gone. So I take a regular J hook and I roll the barb down on it, trying to leave as much bump as possible. And just to get the tip of the barb to curl down, but not crush the barb. And now, when I'm doing that, because if I do get a fish broke off in that light line, I want the hook to be able to fall out, not rot out, not, you know, disintegrate on its own. Literally, without that point of the barb, it will fall out of the fish.
Yeah, they can work it out a lot quicker and easier.
It will just come out in a little while. So that's one of the things I try to do.
But now, it also prevents your bait from coming off by having that roll, just rolling that point over just a little bit.
Yeah, it's tough, but you can do it. You can do it, buddy. I know you can. All right. Let's see. A lot of sharks still showing up.
Speaking of rolling a barb down.
I do not use barbs on sharks because it's cruel and unusual. They have a mouth, I hate to say it, more like a human or an animal because it doesn't have that membrane around, like a bass, a snook, a trout. That stuff around their mouth's made to be torn and healed, and it heals very quickly, where with a shark, it's all muscle, sinew, tissue, and you ripping that barb out is just not good. No. I mean, give the fish a break. That's so anyway, where are these fish we're giving a break to?
They're in the lower 20-foot hole, Pirate Harbor hole, and all through the straits there, basically between Cape Hayes and Boca Grande Pass. And according to Carl, a lot of little guys right there just outside of the pass. I did ask him about those bigger sharks, if they were around, and he said no, and that's when he told me about they're probably out by the shrimp boats that are out there.
All right. People say that nobody shrimps around here. Carl seems to differ with that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some people think that, they do shrimp in the harbor a little bit, but they shrimp a lot in the immediate area around here. And when there's bad weather, they do move inshore. But right now, he's sitting, as of an hour ago, he's sitting just outside of the pass, about 6.5 miles. He looked around and started counting. He counted 8 shrimp boats within sight of him.
Now, why is it, what's with shrimp boat sharks?
Because
we always talk about it, but we haven't explained it.
Well, shrimpers shrimp at night because shrimp are nocturnal. And with the food shrimpers, they actually can drag for longer periods of time than bait shrimpers. And bait shrimpers can only drag in less than 20 feet of water, realistically less than 15 feet of water. But for food shrimp, they can drag for a half hour, hour, whatever they decide they want.
Well, literally, when I worked on a food shrimp boat, we dragged the net until the boat slowed down.
Okay.
Because we're going to kill everything anyway.
Right.
There was never a thought about bringing stuff onto the boat alive.
Right.
Because everything you get has to go on ice.
Yep.
So whether you're dragging for 15 minutes or an hour, hour and a half, it didn't matter. Because you're going to bring those fish up, dump them on the table, and whatever's good is going immediately on ice. That's federal law. When you have bait shrimp, if you drag them too long, they die.
You'll break their necks.
You break their necks if you go too fast. You drag them too long, they die, they drown, they can't keep up to it. But the object is to get them on the boat alive. So 90-some percent, when they bring that net up, dump it on the table, most of that stuff's alive. You're throwing back live starfish, seahorses, fish, all that stuff. You're tossing everything back overboard. And so you lower the mortality. When you have a commercial food shrimping boat, and the bait boats are different. And
right.
When you're getting stuff bringing up for food, it's going on ice. So they can pull faster and longer. and they bring it up, most of the stuff is dead. And that's why the sharks are there.
Yeah, because they actually literally will, they're not dumping it over every time they're done. They actually just, they're sorting out their shrimp.
They're sorting out what they can sell from what they can't sell.
Right.
And it could be shrimp. There's some fish. There's other things. There's a certain amount of bycatch involved in a lot of these things. But they bring those nets up. If you ever watch Forrest Gump, but they dump them on the deck or on a table. And then everything's got to be sorted out by hand. Mm-hmm. And they're tossing all the stuff that, okay, I can sell that. A money, 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 no money, throw it overboard. Money, money, throw it overboard. You know. And
well, they don't even necessarily throw it overboard. A lot of times they actually just throw it in a pile there on the deck.
Right.
And then that's what really gets the things going, is because they've got a pile of debris, and then they dump it over. So they just threw over a 50 to 150-pound chum bag.
Right.
Right. All over the size of the boat.
And what it is either money or not money. Anything that can be sold, legal or whatever, goes into the ice, and everything that doesn't, either thrown overboard or just onto the deck to be scraped over later. So that's why all those sharks and stuff are there. Yep. Because they know at some point those guys are going to clean that boat. They're going to be trying to get all that stuff off the deck. They're going to be washing it down. It's just going to be food after food after food. And it's easy to catch. It's all right there. And they eat it on the way down, then go to eat it off, pile on the bottom.
Right. And they're catching everything in those nets, literally from small shrimp to big shrimp. But they're also not just catching little stuff. They actually catch a lot of file fish I've seen in there, puffers, box fish, snapper, grunts.
Flounder.
Whatever happens to get into
anything it. Anything dumb enough to get caught in a net.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got all sorts of different sizes. So not only do you have, like, say, a large snapper or a flounder that they have to throw overboard because, let's say, they can't legally sell that because of their licensing. I don't know how it works, but just an example. So that's food for the sharks, but all the little bait fish and crabs and other stuff that's bycatch brings in bonita, blackfin tuna, snapper, other critters that are also part of the food source for those sharks to go after, too. So that's why a lot of those big sharks will hang out with them. And they've been basically trained. They're accustomed to knowing commercial boats. I mean, commercial boats all over the world that fish have predators that follow them all the time because it's basically
so do every a ocean liner, naval vessel.
Yep,
because it's a buffet they all throw table. Stuff overboard.
It's a buffet table.
Yeah, and you've got the garbage. You've got everything, and once you're out in the ocean, the only thing you're not allowed to throw legally in the water anywhere in the world is plastic.
Yep.
Everything else, there is a point where you can legally put it in the water. Food waste, human waste, everything else.
Yep.
So every boat since,
Columbus.
Yeah, since Columbus and those guys were coming back and forth, this had sharks following them. That's just the way it's always been. Now, I think sharks are going to have a bit more trouble with some of the newer naval vessels. I mean, they've got destroyers that are 1,000 feet long that do like 70 miles an hour. I mean, that's some nut stuff. RJ, have you ever got to be on a shrimp boat?
No, I've never been on a shrimp boat, but I flew over one once years ago on a
did your arms get tired?
Well, yeah, they did.
Okay.
And I lost most of my
feathers. I've never been on one, but I flew over it.
And one of the things we used to look for when we were in the small plane going, we used to go back and forth from Tampa to the Keys. And, you know, you would see lots of sharks. And anytime you passed over a commercial boat, there would be, it looked like a parade behind the boat.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about fly fishermen. And one of the things I've been very lucky with is all the different jobs I've had and the different companies I've owned. When I was doing a lot of work for the federal government, we were in helicopters a lot. And especially after Hurricane Charley, because I did a lot of storm damage surveys for the feds. I was working with the university, state, everybody. So we're up in this Huey, and I was lucky enough to be able to take Robert and Terry and everybody with me. And we're watching this guy, and he's just south of Boca Grande Pass off Cayo Costa. He's in a very nice little flats boat. He's got his fly rod. He's standing on the bow of his boat. He's all kind of bent over in that fly fisherman crouch, you know, and you could see him pulling the rod and, you know, beautiful cast out there. And we're probably 600 feet above him. So we can see, oh, I would say, what, half, three quarters of a mile either side of them?
Oh, easily.
Easily.
Yeah. And the water was gin clear, too, at this time.
Beautiful, clear water. And we're in this Huey going over the top of them, and I'm hanging out one side, Robert's looking out the other. We're all, and there's nothing like being in a Huey helicopter. Once you've been in it, you will never forget that. Every other helicopter is kind of different, the Rangers and all that, but there's something special about a Huey. But we're going along and boom, 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 boom. We're looking, and all of us are cracking up because here's this guy with this beautiful cast. I mean, expensive boat, his clothes, his fly rod. You can tell this guy's, he's into it. The one thing he's not into is looking behind him. He's on the bow of that boat. He's got his trolling motor down. He's not really moving at this point. He's sitting dead still because he's trying to cast. I have no idea what he was casting at because there wasn't a fish for literally at least a half a mile, three quarters of a mile in front of that boat. 4 feet off of the back of that boat is about 4 to 6 tarpon in a circle daisy chain. Then there's another one a few feet past that, and another one a few feet past that. I thought I was going to fall out of the helicopter laughing. I mean, it was all he had to do was turn his head, for God's sake.
Or just drop the line on his back cast.
If he would have just screwed up and let that line fall into water on the back cast, he would have hooked tarpon. They were right there.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
If I was on that boat, I could have jumped off the back of the boat and landed in the circle of those daisy chain and fish that were that close to the boat. So
it was pretty cool.
I'll never forget that. I was just sitting there going, oh, my God, turn around. You know, and you want to scream at the guy. But one thing about a Huey, there's no way to talk. If you're ever watching a movie and you see two guys talking without microphones and headsets in a Huey helicopter, it's fake. It's so loud in there, it's unbelievable. You got to have the headphones, you got to have the microphones, and you can talk very comfortably with the electronics, but impossible. You'd have to be 2 inches screaming at the top of your voice to let anybody hear you. All right, enough Huey stories. Speaking of Huey stories, beatings, gags. Where are the gags? I feel like gagging. I want to go gagging.
Is that like a baby Huey reference kind of
thing? Yeah, I don't know where I was going, but I went somewhere with it. I got us there. We're into gags.
Okay.
Do you feel like gagging?
Yeah, we have one on the counter that scares somebody every day. Oh, we're talking about fish, not like a gag. The spider in the box.
Oh.
And
a
it was
gag.
So quick.
It was a joke.
Yeah.
That was a joke?
That was a joke.
Work on it.
I can work
on it. You could do better.
I've got a lot better, but you're going to bleep every one of them out, and my mother will hate me.
RJ, control your boy.
I turned this microphone off.
Yeah, all right. So, gags, what are we doing?
They're catching them in 50 to 85 feet of water, mostly.
Best bet for bait. Gag grouper, 50 to 80 feet of water.
Octopus. Octopus has been one of the popular ones, and sardines. There has only been a few guys going out because it has been rather sporty this past week. But the couple guys that have been with some good success have been actually just using the octopus and frozen sardines. A couple guys have caught them on pinfish and squirrelfish and the typical grouper baits, but the two guys that I talked to that were successful, that seemed to be what was going on.
That was my trumpet. Did you like it? Okay.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. Yeah, it was really bad. Red Snapper opens very, very quickly.
Monday.
Red Snapper opened Monday. Now, for those of you who don't have a big boat, who cares? Because where do you got to find these fish?
Red Snapper, the shortest distance you're going to find them is about 40 miles out of Boca Grande Pass. You know, basically, bare minimum of 120 feet of water. You know, and they're going to be most of the time on some type of artificial structure. You will find them on natural reefs, too, and hard bottom. But looking for those artificial reefs is one of the best things.
Nothing I like better than good hard bottom.
Yep.
So.
Exactly.
All right, but Red Snapper is not like a mangrove snapper.
No.
Completely different critter.
Mm-hmm.
Best baits for them?
They're kind of garbage disposals. I mean, I'd be personally taking out some sardines, but cigar minnows are probably one of the better choices, and a lot of guys really like thread fins, frozen thread fins for them. We saw a lot of both those baits when Red Snapper opened. I learned that last summer with that when they did the full summer season every weekend.
Right.
We went through a lot of thread fins and a lot of cigar minnows. We sold the typical squid and sardines like normal, but I think they were using that for added, just for confidence part of it. But the guys that seemed to really know what they were doing were definitely going for the threadies, cigar minnows, and then a couple of them were real adamant.
Do you remember how much a box of cigar minnows is right now?
They're expensive. I want to say they're like 16, 17 bucks for
Yeah, I would say somewhere between 15 and 20 bucks for a five-pound box of cigar minnows, and it's probably around 10 for a box of thread fins.
Yeah, but do you know what a pound of red snapper is going for in the grocery store?
Go ahead.
About 25 bucks a pound.
All right.
But you're probably making you're probably spending about 50 bucks a pound to go catch them.
Yeah, but you got to think of it like fishing is, you know, you get some of the meat, plus, you know, if you go to bowling or try golf for a little while, oh my God, that stuff's really expensive nowadays.
Your father and I were talking about it yesterday, actually, with ourselves and with a customer. You only allowed two of those red snapper. Me personally, they don't really tickle me that much or taste that good to me. But your father turned me on several years ago to the red porgies and the knobhead porgies that we were catching on that long trip
right.
over the weekends. And if I was going to go out there, I'd catch my two snapper, then I'm downsizing my gear and doing basically a porgy rig or a chicken rig, and I'm putting down squid or octopus pieces, and I'm going to fish for those red porgies, knobhead porgies, some of those deeper water porgies, because you're out there in that perfect water for them. They like that 120 to 180 feet of water.
So you're going to use a bank sinker on the bottom, which mm-hmm. is kind of a teardrop shape with an eye on it.
Yep.
And what kind of leader material are you coming up with?
I'm just fishing primarily for the snapper or for the grunts, so I'm only going to use like 30, maybe 40-pound test.
I'm going to say 40 to be on the safe side. Mm-hmm. So you tie your end of your leader to the sinker, go up about 18 inches, tie off a loop in it, mm-hmm. go up about another 20 inches, tie off another loop.
Yep.
Now, when you do a loop, you kind of make an overhand knot, go through it three times with the end of your loop, pull it tight, and then put your hooks off the end of those. You want two hooks above a weight, and then tie your line to the top of it with a swivel.
Yep.
And I don't tie that on line to line. I want a stronger connection than that. But I do like making the loop knots. And if you stop by the store, I can show you. But it's basically you make a loop in the line by pinching it together, come over it once so you've formed a circle, then take the end of that loop you created through that circle three times. Pull it tight. Twice will slip. Four gets clumsy. It's literally three wraps through there. Now, put your hooks on it. Now, I go at about 2-aught hooks when I'm doing those porgies.
Yeah, I'm going to go with probably a 2-aught or a 3-aught in either the VMC or the owners.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the 2-aught hooks because I really want to get a lot of hookups. Every time I get a bite, I want that hook small enough to get in their mouth. I'm not catch and releasing unless they're really tiny, and then usually they don't hit anyway. But I'm putting a piece of squid on, then I'm putting a piece of shrimp on. And for me, that's my favorite porgy rig. Little piece of squid, then I put a shrimp on, little piece of squid on the top one, put a shrimp on. They love that shrimp, banging that shrimp off, and then they come back to get the squid, and I've got them.
Absolutely.
But with the weight below my hooks, I can feel every little tiny bite. I let that weight on the bottom lift it up a little bit so I can feel the pressure of the weight. I don't want to lift it off the bottom. I just want to feel that pressure. Then tap, 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 boom, start reeling up, and I'm getting fish.
Absolutely.
I don't use more than two hooks at once, though.
No.
I don't like one hook. I don't want three hooks. I want two hooks on there. It seems to be the perfect blend. If you can get greedy with multiple hooks, it ends up more of a problem than it's worth. I'm actually, because the fish are smaller, I can easily bring two up, three, four. This is getting to be problematic. Two is really a good number. You can get two fish at once, bring them up, boom, boom, drop them down, get more.
Much easier to untangle.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I like about them.
Yeah. It's really not a bad way to go with that porgy rig. I've done the slip sinker rigs. I've done a lot of that. I do prefer the porgy rig. My bottom hook, literally, the hook comes out and will lay almost right by my sinker. So I do have one right by the bottom. My top hook is hanging above there. It's on a shorter leader or double leader as I can get, so it stays up a little bit, because as soon as the one fish gets on, he starts running around in a circle, and then the second one kind of gets excited. He'll come up and grab that other bait, right, because it looks like the first one kind of got rid of it. Anything else we want to go over today, guys? RJ, anything you can think of?
Let's go fishing.
Let's go fishing. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's going to be humid. It's going to be hot.
Robert's going on vacation, so he gets to do all kinds of stuff. We'll talk about that when he gets back. But Fishing Frank here. Robert, are you there?
I'm here. No matter where I go, I'm always there.
You're always there. RJ, you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye, RJ.
Fishing Frank. Thank you, guys. Go to fishingfranks.com. F-I-S-H-I-N, no G in Southern Fishing.com. Thanks for listening, boys and girls. We will see you next week in my imagination.